You're listening to HG 101, a proud part of the Greenlit Podcast Network. Hey there, loyal listeners. As you know, the HG 101 podcast is made possible by our amazing Patreon supporters who help keep the show alive by donating as little as $2 a month. You can be like them. By chipping in, you'll not only help keep the lights on at HG 101 Towers, you'll also gain access to our secret patrons-only RSS feed. That's the feed that gets an extra bonus episode every week. Here's a taste of what you've been missing. We're going to be talking about Mega Man 11. I mean, one of my favorite things is the fact that Mega Man has, like, actual lore. The more of a continuous narrative you turn Mega Man into, the more you start wondering of, like, why does this keep happening? How many castles can Dr. Wily build?
Building application. Should we turn him down? No, it's great tax money.
I had to submit it to the zoning board to get approval. I needed a variance for the giant radar dish. I had two.
So go to patreon.com/HG101 and donate a couple bucks. That's patreon.com/HG101. Act now and be a hero.
Some, this is painfully obvious, but hardcore gaming means it ain't for the novices. The main source to brain train your knowledge, a lane maintained with a course aimed at colleges. To HG101, we give the honor, thanks to Kirk, a lot of Xerxes to host it proper, as well as Satanga, Cal and Bobinator, Booker Hart and others discuss and discover all the 47,000 games, and when they rate them, you can bet it's scientifically locked in position. Speaking of which, no system is obscure, and look, they wrote a book about it, go out and cop yours.
Hello and welcome to HardcoreGaming101.net's top 47,858 games of all time podcast, where we objectively, definitively, and scientifically rank the games that you nominate. My name is Xerxes, and I'm the show's main host and producer, and on this podcast we have three rules. Rule 1, all rankings are final, official, and scientifically accurate. Rule 2, you can nominate one game at a time via 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher. Those are the ones we try to get to first. You can also go to bit.ly/rankthisplease and add a game to the slush pile and cross your fingers. We make no guarantees on those. Rule number 3, you can nominate games that have already been nominated, but just don't nominate games you've already ranked. See the master list for yourself. It's at bit.ly/47kgames. That's bit.ly/47kgames.
Janine, can you hear me? Janine.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back for this episode. We're going to be talking about Metroid Fusion. Perhaps you've heard of that series. It was nominated by CHM13 on Apple Podcasts via 5-star review, and it rocketed its way up to the 249th episode. It was developed by Nintendo R&D1 and published by Nintendo for the Game Boy Advance. Earliest release date and territory is November 18th, 2002, in the United States. Is the United States' first release? I guess it makes sense. Who's with me to talk about Metroid Fusion?
Hey, I'm Jonathan from the main site. You can just call me Dark. It's who I normally go by.
I'm Word on the Wind.
And it feels weird if I don't put "and" in front of the Great Clade.
That was not awkward at all. So, thank you. And I believe, Jonathan and or Dark, this is your first appearance on the show?
I normally do articles for the website, and a lot of articles, I'm amazed what Kurt lets me get away with.
What's one that you want to promote right now? Because we don't do a good enough job promoting the website on the website's own podcast.
As far as articles I've written that I'm really proud of, I'd say, as far as ones that are out right now, the Broken Reality one for sure. That's probably my favorite at the moment.
Is that like
talk about Vaporwave?
Yeah. Hey, there you go. I'm always willing to straddle that ball centipede, as it were. So there's a deep cut rewarding you for wasting so many hours of your life on this show.
Was that a Rez joke?
It was from, I believe, Gomura Speed, and the joke was, I said something about straddle the ball centipede, because you're a ball centipede type thing. You're a centipede composed of little pixel spheres or something in that game, and I think it was Jeff who made a joke about that. Sounds like a vaporwave.
The last in-joke is dead. The galaxy is at peace.
Oh, perfect. Perfect tie-in.
Transition.
There we go. So, Metroid Fusion. It is one of those Metroid games where it's like, I guess, how is the series doing in terms of like, has it passed into that realm where the diehard fans hate half of the series, or is it still quite just a little bit above half?
So, Metroid Fusion is. Go ahead.
This is my first Metroid game.
Oh, good. I'm sorry.
We've got a baby.
I started gaming on the Sega Genesis I got from my uncle. I moved on to the N64, and I didn't actually start a Metroid game until the Game Boy Advance. I tried a bit of Metroid Prime, and the first Metroid game I beat all the way was Metroid Prime 2.
Hey, that one's my favorite.
I actually like that one a lot, and I don't get why people hate it.
I didn't know that people did. I thought the Prime games had the least popular one
for some reason in the Prime series.
I can tell you why, but that's a different episode.
Yes.
The map design.
We'll go into it later. Anyhow, so Fusion is definitely one of the far more divisive entries in the series. As far as the series canon goes, it follows the events of Super Metroid and basically is the latest in the string of canon in the Metroid series, as far as the narrative goes.
Currently, it might as well be considered
non-canon at this point, because it's looking like Nintendo is never going to return to this point in time in the series.
Well, I think it's actually, if you're going to go in the Metroid canon, I mean, the game starts with, okay, the Metroids are really, really dead now, we promise. Super de duper dead. The last Metroid isn't in captivity, it's dust.
So, yeah, like, in terms of, I think what's more likely is that they will return to it, but not until we've gotten a remake of this one. Which you'll know that something has happened when
they remade the Game Boy one, so it's got to be coming.
Metroid Refusion is a sweet title, and I'm changing my name to it.
Funny you should say that, Metroid Refusion. It's kind of like, because it was for the GBA, right? Like, it's got this kind of non-Metroid-y aesthetic to it, because it's got to be super crazy bright so you could see it on that incredibly dim original Game Boy Advance screen. And that's how I first played it. And I got to admit, I was not a fan of the game at that time. I'd been waiting. I'm the biggest Metroid fan you are likely to meet.
Well, that's...
From the original game on, like, that game is one of the reasons why I'm cursed to do this podcast forever, is because it got me hooked on the idea of weird games.
Yeah. I've actually been playing through OG Metroid during, short bursts of off time I've had. And, I'm not going to say that I think it's better than most of the other entries I've played. And it's just kind of hard for me to go back to it. But I can understand why someone at the time would have appreciated it. Yeah. Also, I killed Ridley and I have no idea where the hell else to go. I can't find Kraid. Can't find Kraid either.
He's in the frozen wasteland.
He's been closer than you think.
Apparently.
Yeah.
This was my
weaknesses.
It's my duty. You go right back to basically the second screen in the game. So right after the room you start in, you go to the room after that, and there's a bombable floor. You go down there at the very bottom. That's Kraid's hideout. Hideout. Yeah, I did it too.
I planted the failure.
Oh, man. Okay, anyway.
Thank you.
Please don't call me.
It's a public service that I do because I can remember that entire game pretty much.
So, one last aside, because everyone else has gotten one so far. You ever hear that song where the guy raps through and it's a walkthrough of Zork?
Mm-mm. I have not heard of this.
So, you should do that for Metroid.
I have heard of the song about the PS1 by the Blue Guys.
No, Norm does the rapping. I do the beats.
Okay, so
you'll note it, like, they're actually worse than probably the stuff that Norm would do if he did the beats, but I feel like I have to contribute something. Norm's stuff is actually way better than what I can do. But also he can rap, which I'm never
that would make it so much better. So anyway,
Metroid Fusion. So when this game finally came out, right, it was how many years? 2002 is how many years after
Super Metroid? I think it came out in 2001. I don't remember exactly. It was early in the GBA life cycle, I know that.
Well, 2002 would count, I think.
Well, if it's 2002, it's 8. Super Metroid is 1994. Metroid 3. Bwam! Super Metroid.
Now, here's my question, just because I always forget this detail. I remember this having a very close release window with Metroid Prime. Was Fusion first or was it Prime?
I think it had connectivity America. Extras. like when they were doing the Game Boy connectivity thing?
Yeah, it did.
I do remember that there was Game Boy Player, you know, extra fun business if you actually think the Fusion suit looks good. But I don't remember which one actually was released first.
And there
was
I think it was Fusion, I want to say, but I don't quote me on that.
Literally the same day. Yep.
Really?
Yep. It's the 17th and the 18th in America.
I'm looking back at this. I think I got them both at the same time because I would have really been looking forward to this.
I got Fusion for Christmas, and I rented Prime later on, and I was like, "Oh, that's cool! It had a really cool atmosphere." And then it took me forever to actually get a copy, and I still haven't finished it.
Yeah, with Metroid Prime, like the funny thing is I was like, again, a huge Metroid fan. I couldn't wait for either of these things. Right? I don't think I know I haven't finished Prime, and I didn't finish Fusion at the time at all because I found it very I was put off by the same things that most people were put off by. But before we get into the gameplay part of it, which is probably going to have to be the bulk of this show, we can talk about kind of the story because it is interesting. It is very like there is not at this point a lot of Metroid lore, really. It's
it's all from this game, essentially.
Manga where she had PT.
Well, okay, I'm sorry. It's this game and the Prime logs.
In things that you'll find in the games and not looking into supplementary material, then yes, it would basically be this and Prime logs that would have the largest concentration of lore.
Yeah, the largest concentration of lore. But, I mean, there are... So, with Metroid 2, there was the whole, like, you know... post-game kind of like cutscene type thing where the baby Metroid follows you. That's the thing. That carries over into Super Metroid where Samus donates her Metroid hatchling to science and it is studied briefly on like a space donut and then kidnapped by a giant space dragon, as it tends to happen.
Hey, guys! I can't even do the voice. I
really wish Beef was here.
Yeah. And so it gets kidnapped and taken back to the planet from the original Metroid. Some of the stuff doesn't matter to Fusion, but since it doesn't take very long, we might as well go over it. And at the end of Super Metroid, the hatchling comes back and saves your life, and it's huge. And it not just, you know, Metroids are creatures who can absorb the life force or whatever energy of whatever they latch their jellyfish teeth onto. They're really strange looking on all kinds. They were genuinely disturbing even from the beginning. They were weird.
Yeah, they're basically just like a big jellyfish with a nucleus cluster and teeth.
I thought
that would have been a lot cooler playing original Metroid first. And you're like, well, okay, so what's a Metroid? And then all of a sudden you're like, oh god, that's a Metroid. Oh,
yeah, I can tell you, like, at the time I didn't know until I got to the end of the game. I thought that some of like the tougher enemies that you fight like early on, like the weird like little bug things that kind of swoop down, I thought those must be Metroids because they're the hardest thing I'd
see.
I was first introduced to the Metroids in the Super Smash Brothers series, so I had them in a different context. So in the end, I just always thought they looked kind of cute.
Well,
yeah, my first Metroid exposure was with Super, so like there was no question what the hell a Metroid is for me. Yeah.
Wait, what were you gonna say?
Oh, I was just going to say that I was about -6 when the original Metroid came out. So I just had a friend who's like, hey, I got this game called Super Metroid. Okay, what's a Metroid? And he's like, play it and we'll figure it out. And then it's like, oh, okay, Metroid's a little jellyfish thing. And it's kind of neat. And then we didn't know what a run button was. So we got stuck in that game for a long time.
Yeah. There.
Oh, God. It took me weeks to figure out how to leave your house in Pokemon Blue.
Ouch.
Weeks, you say.
Weeks indeed.
I was sick.
You try the doorknob.
You're a dull boy, Jonathan. I'm just kidding. Just kidding. It's
Professor Oak, save me.
Mom just keeps feeding me and feeding me.
Wow, you look tired.
I tap the computer and there's a drink in there. I don't know what it does.
Yeah, okay, so...
These single screen games are cool.
What this game says is that after that, I guess Samus goes back to Samus being the main character of the series, goes back to the planet from Metroid 2, and SR388 just rolls off the tongue. Who can ever forget? That's the Metroid's homeworld. But there, she's infected with a different parasite that they call the X. And which is just basically a similar type of thing. But what the game tells you as the story goes on is that the X is like what the
the X is what the Metroids evolved to, like,
they're Metroid prey.
Yeah.
They're what the Metroids feed on, and Samus, having gone on a genocide extinction run back in the second game, basically left them to become apex predators.
Right, which is the whole, it's a very subversive thing that the game is doing there, because what it's doing is it's pointing, it's a very, like, I would say, Japanese thing, like the balance of nature and all that, don't upset the balance. And it's like, if you, the mission of the original game is to, like, exterminate the Metroids on the planet Zebes and kill the mother brain. You do that, the planet explodes. Then you got to go back to where the Metroids came from and kill every last one of them. And there's literally a little counter at the bottom of the screen that tells you when you've killed the last one. It counts down.
I must throw out a nitpick. Zebes doesn't explode until Super.
It's
only the base in the first.
My main takeaway from all this is that Samus is both a terrible parent and a terrible environmentalist.
My takeaway is I'm really impressed there's an ecosystem of like 32 organisms.
She was raised by bird people, so that explains things.
I just like how this whole planet was being colonized by 32 Metroids, and that was it.
They're not exactly breeding like rabbits. They find each other repulsive, too. It's like,
you're terrifying.
Yeah, so
what am I doing here?
But that's the interesting thing. So the extermination aspect of it, what would you expect to happen on a planet where there's this like dominant apex predator and you just wipe it out completely? Something is going to go out of whack, because that's not what you do to nature, right? So it's the X organism that goes just out of control. It's just all over the place. And it infects Samus, and it's like it basically crawls inside of her body, although they do a really good job of not making that as horrifying as it actually is, to the point where it seems to be fusing her spacesuit with her body, because they cannot remove her suit. It's very disturbing if you think about it, which I do, but you might not want to.
I think it was definitely intentional. It was definitely intentional what they're trying to, the tone they're going for this game and the more serious subject matter and all that. And the fact she actually gets a personality beyond the few actions we see her do in the games. I did appreciate all that.
This game gives her tons of personality. Not personality. It gives her tons of words to say.
It gives her tons of letters compared to everything she's ever said.
A lot of elevator text.
I think it was personality. It's just like the personality was subdued, is the best way to put it.
Yeah, it's the game. I mean, look, she is inspired by... what's her name? Ellen Ripley from Alien, right? So she's like, except that, but she's like part that and like part, like, I don't know, like Boba Fett or whatever people imagine.
Science, you bitch.
Boba Fett to be, yeah. Like, it's like a really cool ass suit, and but also like just like a survivor who, even without the suit, would kick your ass. That's Samus. That's what she's like. So I also like, I think
because
that like
alternative.
Well, anyway, so to save her life, they kind of like fuse her suit, which has already been fused with her body, with like Metroid DNA, like the last remaining, like, I don't know, pulp from the baby.
We scrape some off of your shoe.
They surgically removed the parts of the power suit, leaving her with like the inner workings of it, but the exterior was off, and that's where they applied the stored Metroid DNA. From the baby Metroid.
That's what I'd do to patch up a spacesuit.
If I can. I have to give the Metroid series props for the ways it actually comes up with reasons that you don't have your stuff anymore. Because they do a couple of good jobs sometimes. Like,
sometimes they
do. I have a concussion. Yeah. And...
Yeah, in this one, so in this one, you don't have all your badass gear from Super Metroid because it had to be like surgically removed from your body to keep from killing you. But the other cool thing it does is it also, like, instead of just enemies drop, like, you kill an enemy, there's a glowing power orb for some reason. Never explained why. In this game, it doesn't do that, because you kill an enemy, they're all creatures that are infected with this parasite. And so the parasite will just go flying around, and your suit, because it's part Metroid, it will absorb it, and that will heal you or give you missiles for some reason, which is the best.
So we need to explain what the hell the X are to make this make any sense. The X are basically shape-shifting parasitic entity that will adopt the form, function, and capabilities of whatever the hell it is consumed.
Not unlike the aliens from Alien.
Or, to dumb it down, have you guys ever seen Spider-Man 3?
No.
Yes. I have. I liked it.
No.
It was clunky, but okay.
Okay, so I was going to make a symbiote joke in the most roundabout way, but I'm really glad that two of you hadn't actually watched Spider-Man 3, so I couldn't introduce the symbiotes in the worst way to introduce the symbiotes. Thanks for that, sandbagging.
It's a thing that, it's a parasite that takes over the body.
The studio made him. Can't blame him all.
But, yeah, so now that Samus is part Metroid, she can absorb the X and prey upon them just as, you know, the creatures themselves would. And that's how she will restore her health and modify them for ammunition replenishment.
Right.
And
takes place on a... sorry, go ahead.
And said, and rather than having the bird suits, the bird statues, that's how you also get stuff. Like your shots and your missiles and your...
Yeah, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but... It's at least worked into the story so that it kind of like it's nonsense, but at least there's some reason that it's like, okay, this is the way it's done now. And I think that's interesting. So another interesting thing about this game is that it takes place entirely on a man-made structure. It's on a space station, and the space station is designed to recreate the ecosystems and environments and house the creatures that were taken from SR388, right? That's the planet, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
There's a variety of things, and that being a specific thing is actually kind of a plot point that gets brought up at the 2/3 mark, so that's actually kind of a spoiler.
So, it's, I think it's okay. Like, I don't want to spoil, there's a certain character of sorts that has a thing that happens to it, and that I don't want to spoil what that is. I mean, you'll see it coming a mile away, but it's good when it's fun when it happens. But the thing is, like, what's interesting about the whole space station aspect of it and the different environments is that everything is walled off from each other, unlike more so than a typical Metroid game. It's a little bit more
as opposed to like a built into cave system.
I actually found that a bit annoying when I first started playing this game because like, I just kept finding myself stuck trying to figure out what to do in certain areas, even though the options were so limited. It's like getting stuck in a really obtuse adventure game puzzle kind of thing.
Yeah. That, I think, will hit a little bit later, because I share some sentiments with you there, Dark.
I had a couple moments of that myself my first time through, when it took me way too long to figure out just like, oh, I could walk through this wall. I don't have to shoot it first. Thanks.
Yeah, that's one of the things about the game that is... If you've played at least Super Metroid, but especially if you played the other Metroid games, all of them up to that point, but at least Super Metroid, you'll have an idea of the way you think the game is going to go. And this game is playing with you from the very beginning. So you're on a spaceship. It's attacked like this organism. The X gets loose, kills everybody. It can create zombies. It can do this. It can do that. It infects the different ecosystem tubes or whatever that are a part of the space station. And Samus's job is to kind of get the space station up and running again, find the X, exterminate it, because she learns zero lessons in her life. and then escape. So what she does is that, and then there's, but the ship has a computer, and the computer is, it kind of tells you where to go next, which is the exact opposite of what happens in every other Metroid game.
So yeah, this is one of those points of contention that a lot of people get because of the fact that the Galactic Federation basically saved Samus's life. She's not here by choice. This isn't her mission of her own volition. She's actually operating here basically as a favor in exchange for them doing this for her. Never mind the fact that, you know, she saved the Galactic Federation who knows how many times in the past. They're wanting her to cash a favor on this one.
But counterpoint, it's probably the closest she's ever done to bounty hunting.
That's true.
Yeah.
But yeah, so
that's true.
So so she's here, and thus she is under instruction to follow the directives provided to her by an AI by the name of Adam, who is the one who is talking at her basically the entirety of the game.
But the game hints that something is kind of weird about Adam, because Adam speaks to her with the, as she explains in the elevator cutscenes, where she talks to nobody, I guess. But
it's just like her thoughts, I think.
Yeah, you know, so the player can see it. But they're very, very well-organized thoughts, not like my thoughts would be.
Damn my ass, it just...
Oh, God!
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be a great ROM hack for this game, is when you're in the elevator, just the thoughts you actually have when you're in an elevator.
I think I'd go for pizza.
I appreciated the writing in those sequences a lot. They were handled a lot better than I was expecting, I think, because like, I wasn't that used to good game writing yet. I was like 12.
Yeah, and it's not bad. I think the thing that threw people off. So anyway, just to get over it, it's like Samus explains to herself, I guess, that the voice of the computer, the way the computer talks to her, I don't know whether it's the sound of the voice or like the diction or something like that, reminds her of her old commanding officer when she was in the space army or whatever. So that's, there's that. And so that, like, she's learning more and more unsettling things about this computer AI as she goes along. There's a HAL 9000 ish vibe to it, but also with some like kind of psychological horror ish aspects. But anyway, the way that it works is like, it's, again, it tells, the computer tells you where to go next. It even opens up your map screen and brings like a little, like pulsating square over to the section of the map where you're supposed to go next. And this pissed me off when I first played.
Yes.
Because this is not why I play Metroid games, right? You play Metroid games to get like horribly lost and miserable, and then suddenly you find your way out of it and you feel really powerful and awesome. And that is not how this game starts out.
Yeah, Fusion is a distinctly more linear experience to the Metroid formula than any preceding or following entry, really.
Right. The first two part, well, I would say Metroid 2 is actually very linear in a very similar way. It just doesn't tell you where to go next, but you really have no choice but to go to the right spot.
It doesn't feel as linear, though.
That, yes. The little pulsating square, and then kind of how the levels are laid out. Because, like, a lot of times you'll be, okay, well, that's like six rooms over, so this will be really easy. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, wait a second, that door isn't turning on for some reason.
Yeah.
You just got to take this narrow corridor.
I haven't been given a key to go
all the way
here.
Around. Oh, that's right. Right, the
yeah, I didn't give me a key to go through this door to get to the place where I was told to go, because I haven't been deemed worthy enough to walk through a
fucking door. Well, it's more like, there's a set number of things. There are things happening, and your job there is to prevent the bad stuff from happening. You're trying to stop the X from, it's at the beginning, it's not even clear how this like space amoeba is doing anything. But then you realize that, oh, it's like recreated a evil Samus using the pieces, I guess, of the armor that were cut off of you.
Yes.
And at the beginning, so it's just like you, except it has all your Super Metroid powers, which is a really brilliant touch.
And that's probably one of the most notable points about the game, the SAX, the Samus Aran X, is basically an X parasite that fused all of the surgically removed power armor components, power suit components, and is now able to utilize them with the exact same skill and precision of what Samus would be doing at the end of any given Metroid game.
I thought old saxophone there was kind of underused, because it doesn't really appear much early in the game, so there's just a large chunk where you're used to it just not appearing there, yeah, or even much.
It shows up at times, and it's really just there to kind of scare you and let you know that there's an antagonist in this game, because there isn't one. Like, your antagonist can't be a space amoeba. There's other weird stuff that you see early in the game that kind of, it's like telegraph stuff that happens later. Like, you can go into a room where it's like a super freezing room where it'll actually hurt you, which is a first for Metroid. Usually it's too hot and it hurts you. But you, because you're fused with Metroid DNA, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Metroids are weak against what? The ice beam. So Samus now is weak against ice. Anyway, you find the giant space dragon Ridley frozen solid, which is really a cool little touch.
At least one of his species. It's not Ridley himself.
Really? I thought it was.
No,
it's okay, whatever. I guess there's got to be more than one, right? There's got to be a Mama Ridley somewhere.
Just the Prime continuity alone just confuses me in how he keeps coming back, because he dies like three separate times in that.
Yeah,
it's still fallen.
Yeah, I mean, who really cares? I mean, the point is, you play a Metroid game, you want to fight a space dragon. End of story.
The space dragon that killed your parents.
Metroid. They knew what they were doing.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's like a character in Smash Brothers now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like crazy. Anyway.
And in his trailer, he kills Mario horribly.
As we all God want bless to do.
Him. So, yeah, it's Thanks. Like there's little cool, very Super Metroid-y things that happen in this game that I don't think it gets credit for. The visual storytelling, because people are so focused on the literal storytelling.
It right? looks
the,
very
the text
good.
On the screen.
Yeah.
For the 2001 on the Game Boy Advance, it looks amazing, honestly.
It is so, 2002, for the record.
So just for, oh, yeah, right. I did check it. It really is the very end of 2002.
Okay.
But that's fine. It doesn't matter.
I don't know why I was thinking 2001.
None of this matters. Because the HAL 9000 aspect of it, that's why. Yeah, so, you know, being me, like, even when I replayed the game in preparation for this show, the first thing that the computer tells you to do is go here. But you can go to one other part of the space station if you want to. And so the first thing I do is always, my Metroid instincts are like, go to the place that is not the obvious place to go. You'll get extra missiles or something that will help you out. You go there and you just can't get in. And the AI is either, I can't remember if it's either like, oh, this is, I'm incapable of opening this to you, or this is not where you're supposed to be right now. Go here.
Oh, and so the has basically complete security clearance authority over the space station and just refuses you go places.
The beginning of the game, there's a power issue.
Yeah, it's, you know, there's some artifice involved of like, oh, you can't do this yet. And that is a much bigger part of the game that I think gives this game a bad rap, which is Other M for the Wii, which is literally like you have all the stuff you need, but it gets like authorized to use it as the game goes on.
But it's definitely not nearly as bad as Other M, because I used to defend Other M before I played it because of all the reactionary crap around it. But then I played it and I stopped defending it.
This game, I feel like it is doing a lot more with that. Because the idea of the computer bossing you around and preventing you from going places you want to go is intentional.
Yeah.
And
Go
ahead.
Okay, so this game, and we're not going to even make the comparisons, but this game does well in that area is, like I mentioned earlier, this is a Galactic Federation mission, but the idea is the scope of the mission keeps evolving. Like, the game is like, okay, well, we need power so you can get out of here, so go hit the power switch or whatever the hell it is in the beginning. It's like, we got to get this thing. This thing is over here. Go get this really quick. I guess I'll let you over in these doors. Okay, fine. And then by the end of the game, it's like, okay, you just go ahead and have free reign because things have gone completely.
The story, the computer is still telling you what it wants you to do.
Well, yeah.
But as the game progresses and you get more powerful, it can't stop you from doing what you want to do. You can find ways of getting to different parts of the space station that you are ostensibly, or at least on the way the computer says that you're not supposed to be there.
That's right.
But you can do it. And you can start sequence breaking.
Dead ends.
It gamifies the things in Super Metroid that you weren't actually supposed to be able to do.
Yeah.
Which is like getting to parts of the air, you know, which is a lot of the fun of Super Metroid, is going places you're not supposed to be yet. This game makes that a part of the gameplay and a part of the story.
Yeah.
100%. If you don't understand that, then you don't remember the end of the game. That's how it is.
Well, I'm.
Basically don't trust the Federation, idiot.
Yeah. Does a good job about, even if you don't hard sequence break, it's kind of like, wait a second, how the hell did you get that weapon?
Yeah, you're not really sequence breaking. I mean, I'm sure you can, but you're not really, but it makes you feel like you are. It does a good job of, even for new players, I think, of showing you what you're capable of doing. Like, oh, you can bomb through certain areas. You can go places that aren't on your map because the computer decides what's on your map too.
Yeah.
And so you can find places even in the very beginning of the game that you were never told to go. But by doing that, you're kind of laying the groundwork for, oh, I have a lot more agency here than I may think. And as you get more powerful, you can just kind of do whatever. You can connect all, like you can traverse the space station by just blasting open the walls and going through the ducts and stuff.
And
other things that you're not supposed to be doing.
Right? Because I don't want to forget about this. There's a cute little thing in this game where if you actually, like actually factually sequence break it.
Yes, the Shine Spark.
Yeah, the whole Shine Spark thing where, so, I mean, anybody who kind of understands how a game works is like, well, okay, the text box isn't going to be expecting me to do this, and it completely does. Like, oh, well, congratulations. Even in all of this narrative, not expecting you to do things, we didn't expect you to do that. It'll go, because I remember it clearly kind of going, because you're right, it kind of like shows a little more what's going on behind the plot.
Yeah, like it lays out what the plot is, which is kind of funny. Because you're catching Adam talking to their supervisor, basically.
But, it doesn't end the game. It just goes, we'll open the door so you can get out of this. Go get back to what you were doing.
All right, it's been a bit. But, so...
I think there's also an argument to be made that the reason it's structured this way is to make you feel truly weak at the beginning of the game, because it's trying to... Samus is, like, completely changed, doesn't have the actual suit, is in this weird new form that doesn't seem to have any particular advantages at first.
Really ugly new suit.
Ah, yes, Blue Samus.
And not even that, the fusion suit looks terrible.
It's kind of I kind of like it, but, like, it's definitely not going to, it shouldn't be the replacement for the original suit for the whole franchise, definitely.
I don't think it would be, but it's not my favorite either. Like, well, I'll agree with Word. You know, she makes the kind of point I wanted to make, which is and that was one of the other things that turned me off of this. Like, this doesn't look right, etc. But there's cool stuff this game adds and changes and stuff about the way that the suit works, and it's all done within the story context with maybe one exception. I mean, you can, number one, you can hang on ledges, which really isn't a part of the story.
Geez, I was going to bring that up because the ledge grab, which is through the quote power grip enhancement, bugs the ever living hell out of me because it feels so absolutely unnecessary. Like, you could just be able to make Samus jump two tiles higher and achieve the exact same result.
Narrative conceit, actually, because what I'm trying to get at is that you're meant to feel weak and get stronger over time. So, and it would make, and you feel like you kind of feel that connection a bit better if you do something like, you're gaining back strength to climb up a ledge than just jumping higher, which doesn't have the same amount of pizzazz, also, I guess.
Also, it allows you to, you can grab a ledge and then roll up into the Mari Mari and just like, so there's like little holes in the wall where you can latch onto it, grab it, and then as you're pulling yourself up, you turn into the ball and can roll into it. That's something you couldn't do if you could just jump a few pixels higher. And it looks cooler, as Jonathan was saying, is it, like, it communicates a little bit to the player of like, oh, you're kind of hanging on by the skin of your teeth here. The ledge grab thing is the thing. The other thing that some people don't like, but I actually think is brilliant, is it, you can't use the freeze beam because, again, that's too risky if you are part Metroid, because Metroids are weak against ice, right?
Yeah, the idea is that since, you know, the power beam and et cetera functions by coursing energies through the suit and then just kind of releasing them, since your suit itself does not actually protect you from ice, it would hurt you to fire it, so you can't actually use it. Which, I like that idea. What I don't like is their substitution idea, which doesn't actually solve the problem.
I do like it. So you get freeze missiles.
Oh, yeah!
You get ice missiles, which makes absolutely no damn sense to me whatsoever, because you're still, you know, constructing the ordnance within the suit before deploying it. It's the same principle. It's just a missile.
You're part alchemy.
You also collect red space amoebas to get more of them.
Exactly.
None of it makes sense. It's nonsense all the way down. But the thing is that it makes gameplay sense, because you have to use the freeze beam a lot in the game, just like you do in any Metroid game. But you don't want to always be freezing things just before you kill them with your beam. That is the one like design element that I do not like about the other Metroid games, is like, the freeze beam is mandatory. You can't get where you're going a lot of times without the freeze beam.
Well, that's why I like the solution that Super had for it, of being able to toggle your various beam types on and off. So if you don't want to be freezing things, you can just turn it off for a while.
So tedious.
That was annoying.
I mean, I don't know how often you do it. I like having I like seeing everything frozen first.
Yeah, but it makes backtracking when you're wandering around. Like, some of those one hit enemies now take two hits, and if you're lost, that gets really annoying really fast.
It's just nice because you can toggle on the missiles already just by pressing the shoulder button. And
the missile toggle is a design improvement, I will concede, given that, you know, the previous method was to cycle through with the select button, which, you know, does not lend itself to, you know, quick gunplay and is not particularly satisfying. So I will, you know, concede that point. But I do not like the ice missile.
And the idea of, like, you don't need to freeze everything in the room that you're shooting at. You just need to freeze usually one thing so you can step on it. And that's perfect. It also makes it a little bit more challenging because you don't have, like, the spacer or the wave beam or whatever that you can add on to the freeze to make it impossible to miss anything. You've got to actually figure out, like, you got to wait for the thing to be right where you want it to be. And then you got to shoot it with the missile, and you can run out of ammunition. It's like, it's just, it makes the freeze beam so much more of a kind of a technology that your character has to, or that you, the player, has to kind of master, than it just a thing that you can toggle on and off of your weapon. I think it's better, and I hope that if they ever return to these things and make a new 2D, you know, Metroid game, that they return to that, because I find it much more satisfying than the orthodox way.
I think they did ice missiles somewhere else. Didn't they do that in, like, Corruption?
No.
Wait, no, I thought they did that in something else.
Corruption's 3? I guess I don't know.
Yes, that was the one on the Wii. Well, the accelerometer.
I don't sound familiar.
Because you don't have an ice beam.
Isn't there, like, some big thing with Metroid Prime Metroids? They're not, like, the ice hole business.
I don't know.
No, they're regular ass Metroids.
The Prime thing is at this point kind of its own timeline, though, right?
No, it's still in there.
No.
Really? I don't...
Yeah, it's still canonical.
Slotted in between 1 and 2.
It doesn't make any sense, though.
It's still canonical that the space pirates tried to make a morph ball, which is the greatest thing that's ever happened in any video game lore, ever.
Yeah, I like the... Do they ever show, like, that failing where, like, you...
You never see it. You only get to read about it, and it's just, like, a satisfying thing to read.
We tried to replicate the morph ball technology 2 days later. We have absolutely no idea how she does that.
Yeah. We don't know how this works, and all of the attempts that we've made have failed grotesquely.
Yeah, I'm just imagining somebody, like, compacting themselves into space and just, like, blood everywhere. It's like squeezing, like, a giant sponge full of blood, and it just... it's smaller. Like, I mean...
All right, so around. We're being asked if we're about done yet, so...
We're not. Is there anything else we want to say, like, about, you know, like, is there anything else, I guess...
I do actually have another thing that I want to touch on about why I don't like this game. Okay. The soundtrack is not very impressive. There's exactly one track in the entire game that I can actually remember, and that is the SRX Module 1 location.
Yeah.
Everything else is immensely forgettable and just... I cannot recall it in my head, and I know I didn't like it.
I listened to some of the soundtrack earlier today in prep for this, and... It all just went in one ear and out the other. It was just the most generic space theme stuff I've ever heard.
It's really not impressive, no. And it sounds terrible.
So the audio design in this game is honestly, frankly, a gigantic miss.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. Game Boy Advance.
Like, even independent from it being on the GBA and its, you know, infamous poor audio components, like, you can still crank good music out of the GBA if you have, like, good composition. There's no good composition here, and even, to, like, the sound effects aren't, you know, particularly satisfying.
I'm just kind of saying
mass they were disappointment. Like,
one other fun fact I want to bring up before we get into the ranking and some arguments I have for making for ranking. This game runs on the same engine as famous top 47,000 alumni Wario Land 4.
I did not know that.
Oh yeah, that's right. It does run on the same engine.
It's because even the same test rooms have been found in the game. So they just took the Wario Land 4 stuff and popped in some Metroid stuff.
A way better game.
Yeah, I guess for me, like, what I want to see out of a Metroid game now is anything but Super Metroid. Anything but Super Metroid. Not that was bad, but Super Metroid is too easy, and I never need to play it again.
I see. That's the trick, is I can play Super Metroid almost once a year. And going back to what Dark said there, so I have this, like, I mean, everyone kind of knows I play role-playing games a lot, and I hate losing in role-playing games a lot, because there's a lot of times in role-playing games where you have to go through something, you have to do everything exactly the same. It's, you have to walk through this door, you have to go over to this guy, talk to this guy, give him this dialogue.
You gotta get this cutscene.
Super Metroid, or, like, even, like, an action game, you have some difference in how, like, if let's say you're playing through Mario, even Mario, it would seem like you have some similar paths, but you don't have to necessarily jump every time in the exact same way, in the exact same order, on the exact same enemies. Metroid Fusion, and particularly the SAX bits, feel like that, where you have to, it's tile by tile by tile, you have to hit
the right order.
And that's
sort of... you haven't been handed.
Yes, and that's, I mean, Metroid Fusion, the game overall, isn't quite that bad, but the game... Like, the set pieces, like, I can do a lot of Super Metroid, especially, like, the Norfair or near the end of the game. I can do that in all kinds of ridiculous orders. I'll forget about Crocomire until near the end of the game. Like, I'll be like, wait a second, I recognize, oh, that's Crocomire! And, you know, it's sort of things like that, whereas Metroid Fusion, the game's like, okay, get this item, now get this item, now get this item. Now you have the whole place to explore to get this, this, and this item. Not even as a Metroid game, just as a game in general, that drives me nuts.
Yeah, well, let's rank it. But before we rank it, I just want to say that it's possible to agree with what everybody's just said, but also to really like that aspect of it.
Well, that's...
Because the game, the fact that the game, like... When most Metroid games, the point where you're like start going back and really backtracking and collecting all the stuff you missed, it's about halfway to 2/3 through the game. That's the way this game works. It's just like it doesn't give you the illusion that you have the ability to do that beforehand, which you really usually don't,
but you
except for the original Metroid,
don't
the
have...
only one. And everybody hates that game. So it's like, look, that's total freedom right there. And people don't like it. Super Metroid is tricking you into thinking that you can do more than you actually can.
Well, like I said, I know, because I play the game once a year, and I've done things. Yeah, because I'm terrible at the sequence wall breaking or wall jumping things. Like, I don't sequence break the game very hard. It's just near the end of the game.
What I'm saying is that when Fusion opens up, there's a story reason for it. It's very clever. If they did another Metroid game that was the same way, I would not be happy with it, because I feel like it's been done, and I feel like the series should always be doing something slightly different than what it did before. But that's why I like this game, is because it's not Super Metroid. It does a lot of the same kind of storytelling, visual storytelling aspects of it, but it also adds, you know, the standard, you know, it gives you some text, it gives you some insight into the characters. I don't think that stuff is bad. And I do think that the game is playing with you in a way that is very sophisticated and laudable. It's messing with the player in a way that maybe, like, you know, like everybody praises, you know, Metal Gear Solid 2 for hating the player. I don't think this game hates you, but it is messing with you. And that was like a great surprise to me, was to go from hating the game to giving it a second shot and being like, oh, I got far enough. I'm like, I see what's going on here.
And
I like this. And so I would put it around, I would put it like, I feel like above like Ghouls and Ghosts, below Thief the Dark Project is kind of where I'm thinking. That would make it the new 89. And I don't want to go in too far about that. Puts it below Mega Man X and other games that people like more than I do. So I'm meeting you all halfway here.
So, like, the spot that I was looking on the list was under Sinistar, which is 260.
Oof.
Pretty low.
So, okay. Really quick, Xerxes, I'm going to throw you this. I definitely agree with you in a lot of ways. What it does well. And I think this game is a once must play. Like, absolutely go through it once. I'm looking in kind of this 150-60 area. Like, we got Planescape Torment, we got Strange Journey, we've got Dragon Quest V, I think, is like right below Dragon Quest V, Phantasy Star. That's maybe where I would be looking.
Can we put it at least above Rayman 2, The Great Escape, one of the biggest travesties in horrible things we've done with this podcast?
Okay, I'm not allowing you a wiggle room on this just to spite at a game.
Well, you don't have to. We can just do it by a straight up or down vote. I'm just trying to get somebody whose opinion is malleable.
I think I'm not going to let you. I like Final Man Fantasy Tactics.
Good game.
Like, Final Fantasy Tactics is one of my favorite things in the whole world.
Okay, Jonathan.
I'm going to say something weird. I think it's like in a weird middle ground where it's like a traditional Metroid game, and like how Suda 51 designs a video game. And that is by, as you said, infuriating the player, messing with them. But it doesn't go nearly as far as Suda 51, so it's not as interesting to me. But it's also, I also kind of like it because I don't like the traditional 2D Metroid formula as much as other people. I've always bounced off it like I do with the 3D Zeldas, except Wind Waker for some reason, but I like the 2D Zeldas. It's very weird.
On the subject of messing with the player, I never felt that way going through it the first time. Like, I always just felt like, okay, it's saying things at me. I'm not supposed to trust the computer.
You're a Philistine. Jonathan, how are you going to finish that sentence?
I would, I'm kind of new to the ranking thing, so I'm just going to say I would probably put it somewhere dead in the middle. I don't have super strong opinions one way or another. There's stuff it does well, stuff it does not so well, but it's not a game I love or hate, but it's a game I do respect, and there are like parts of like, hey,
so
that's really
the
cool.
The list is currently 548 games Jesus. Long, so the half point would be 274, which is around where I was saying.
Yeah, that's
274 would be Dragon Ball Z Super Sonic Warriors.
How is
this definitely above
anywhere
that.
The same level of average?
Oh man, Super Sonic
Dragon
Warriors
Ball
is great.
Z.
Right. It's a pretty good game, but no,
it ain't no DBZ Budokai.
It's definitely worth one play, like from beginning to end. Sit down, do it. It's neat as hell. It's just I cannot bring, because I tried even for this podcast. I'm like, okay, I haven't played it in 10 years. Even longer, probably. Let's sit down. Let's do this. I'm like, no, God, I know the whole game still.
It's not traditional enough, but it's also not weird enough, I think, is a good way to put it.
Go ahead, I agree.
So we've got two votes for basically like almost exactly the middle. And we've got one vote for in the top 100, which is me, the loser. And we've got one vote for in the, what was it, 150-something?
Well, I'm going to say at no higher than Final Fantasy Tactics at 165.
Okay, I will second that because I don't want it to go as low as in the 260-somethings. So I think we're at coin toss territory.
So
can we decide on like what it would, where it would go if it loses the coin toss?
200?
As opposed to, okay, now hang on here. That's some sneaky coin toss where he's like, oh yeah, if it's right, it goes where I think it goes. If it doesn't, then it goes, not as far as where you're saying.
What if we just put in a
Well, I'm saying 69? That's why I'm seeking an agreement between the other two people, right? I mean, I'm just trying to make it so this show doesn't go on for 79 minutes.
So if Xerxes wins, it goes below.
I say we just put it at rank 69. Because SAS stands for like sex.
No. Yeah. Okay. All right.
I've solved it.
All right. I'm an Seriously, excellent audition can we like? Can the two of you like come up with something that is basically you can agree on, and then we can just flip a coin and we'll be done with it?
I kind of like the idea of having 100 ranks of disparity on this coin toss.
That's the kind of game it is, though. I think it's very true to the game and how it's been received.
It is. I will grant you that. It is definitely,
Can we just put it on game. Both sides?
Come to a what's it going to be? Rank
pretty good.
Something, throw something out there.
Space Hulk. Somebody.
Fine. Okay. Yeah. Space Hulk. Yes. Like it goes under Space Hulk if it loses.
Okay. So Tails, it goes underneath Space Hulk. Heads, it goes underneath Final Fantasy Tactics. I'm just letting this coin hit the ground. Okay. The coin of science. I'm looking at the most beautiful face I've ever seen. John F. Kennedy. I could kiss you. It goes beneath Final Fantasy Tactics. Thank you so much, everybody. I am sorry, but that is literally the kind of game it is. If it sounds like it might not be your thing, then in your imagination, rank it down about 100 spots lower.
Oh, God, I forgot to talk about God of War.
Everybody else, that's where it goes. Right below Final Fantasy Tactics, right above whatever... I lost my place.
Age of Wonder Shadow Magic.
I don't even remember what that is. That's where it goes. Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
And we're sorry. But not really. That's all for this episode. Special thanks goes out to our lovely co-hosts and compatriots, our booking agent Jeff Rude, our theme song MC Norm, check him out at Normally Retro on Twitter, and our technical assistant, video editor, and scriptwriter Ed Burns. You can support this podcast by making a small monthly donation at patreon.com/HG101. I know I did. By subscribing to the HG101 YouTube channel, and by following at GC9X and at HG_101 on Twitter. You can also hang out with us at our Discord channel. It's at bit.ly/HD Discord. But most importantly, help us spread the love of games by getting on iTunes, subscribing to HG101, and giving us a 5-star review. Do it because you like us and you want us to succeed. Until next time, keep keeping it real.